I was so impressed with this lady that I had to see if I could bring her to our convention. So we made it happen, and I am so excited to have Simone Leibster to be presenting next at our agenda. Simone was born in 1930, and she was born in France. At the age of 11, she was arrested by Hitler's armies for not wanting to salute the Nazi flag. Simone is a Holocaust survivor. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Simone Leibster to give us her powerful presentation of There's po Strength and Power. There's Power in Strength. At this time, help me to welcome Simone Leibster. Simone?
And Mr. Brown, I'm Greg Milakovich, so I'm going to be just doing a little bit of an interview with Simone, if that's okay.
I appreciate it.
And
Absolutely, Greg. Thank you.
okay, excellent. So, just so you know, I'm Greg. My wife Sandra is right off the screen here, and we help the Arnold Leibster Foundation, which Simone is a co-founder of. And Simone comes to us from France. So we want to thank everyone here at the National Federation of the Blind in Indiana, Mr. Brown, Ms. Hollingsworth, Mr. Lauf, if I'm saying that name right, for helping us to be on. So Simone, I'll just give you the opportunity to say hello to everyone first. Oops, we're not hearing you. You'll have to unmute yourself. Simone, can you unmute yourself?
Let's see. Is
There.
this better?
Yes, very good.
Yeah, I got a label. It is a pleasure for me to greet you all and express my feelings of appreciation for your invitation, and I will do my best to give you some details about my past. As was said before, I was born in 1930. That is 12 years after World War ended, which meant that my country had been French. My parents were born 25 years before World War I during the German time. So this is the setting of our family. Parents German, me French school. And in 1940, the Hitler's army came to recuperate Alsace for Germany. And there is where my story starts.
Thank you. So just to start as a little overview, could you give a description of Nazism and how it came to power?
The first day at the German school was shocking for me. Because right away the teacher told us in Germany there is only one person, one people, one law, one party, only one leader, and he is the savior. That is why you will greet him by saying, "Heil Hitler." This is mandatory wherever you would go, and the workers would have to sign up in a political party, but all political parties were under Nazi control. It looked like being freedom, but it was not. And they right away, as soon as I arrived, they opened the concentration camp in Alsace itself, which is called Schirmeck. And then at school, I faced the first day a panel. On that panel were all the races listed, starting by the subhumans, which to the opposition of the Germans who were Aryans. And we were taught in school that the Aryans have to defend their liberty and their right and stop the increasing of the subhuman society, to small it down, to squeeze it down, with by the time they may be get eliminated because they were using the Aryans, misusing them by stealing them and so on. So right away I realized different things. Political, everybody was involved. The greeting was Heil Hitler, and the theory of those subhumans, which have to be eliminated, was dominating all the system. This was really a shock. And this was my first school day. I learned that at once, but it was repeated afterwards.
Thank you for explaining that. Now, so what was at this time, what was the position of Jehovah's Witnesses that brought them into conflict with the Nazis?
Well, when you think it over, there are different things that did not be in harmony with what the Bible says, because the Bible doesn't make discrimination with poor or sick ones. The Bible doesn't make differences with people. The Bible doesn't give to any man the position to be the leader, the total leader, the leader of the mind, because we were taught there is one leader, one thought for everyone. You had no right to think differently than the leader. Now, this is not something that is in harmony with the Bible. Now, Jehovah's Witnesses were known for being Bible teachers, and they would put the Bible as their direction, and they would not give in, no matter who would demand something. They would not give in to something who was against Bible principles. After all Germans, or mostly, had the Bible at home. It was not a strange book. It is the Protestant had the Bible. So really, the position of the witnesses was to be peaceful citizens, but never follow any law that would go against Bible teaching, that each one could see in their own Bible. So because of that, a ban came upon them. Already in 1933, the Bible, the books, the meetings, the teachings were banned. But not only that, they started off hunting, looking where the people who studied the Bible were living. So already in Germany, the persecution had started. And among the very first ones in concentration camp used to be Jehovah's Witnesses. So this was the situation. We came into it. We had read about it in newspaper, but there's a difference between reading about it and getting under that control.
Very good. Thank you. So now with that background, we're interested in hearing about your decision as you face these things. Now, interestingly, as Mr. Brown mentioned, you were 11 as these things began to really happen. So we might normally think that we would ask, well, what did your parents decide? What was their decision? But, and of course, we're interested in that. But the heart of this goes to the question, what was your decision and why?
My parents never taught me what I should do. We had discussion at home about Bible teachings and what the Bible was demanding. But my parents would never mention anything, you cannot do this or you cannot do that. They believed that I should have enough knowledge about what the Bible demands. Now, as I said, well, the very first day I saw that list about those subhumans and the Aryans, I realized that this was in opposition with what the Bible was teaching, completely different. I would never agree. Now, when I learned that Heil means salvation, belongs to, and a matter of fact, we were taught in school that this was the same greetings that the Roman emperor in the first century was demanding, was that lifting the hand to greet this the Caesar, who was called the supreme authority. So I made the link right away when I got this explanation. Well, I will never be able to say Heil Hitler, because he is not my supreme authority. My supreme authority is God, is in the Bible, is not in Nazism. So right away, I came in difficulties, because we had to greet when we came to class, when we left the class, when another teacher would come visiting, we had to go up. It was constant. And we even had to greet with Heil Hitler if we met in the street a teacher. So it was a complete, total pressure on the other matter. And then they had the youth, the Nazi youth. Well, it was not compulsory, but they made a difference between the ones who would wear the Nazi youth outfit and the other ones. And because I refused to go to the Nazi youth camp, our class would go there once in a while, and I knew it would be a political situation. I just prefer to stay home and not to go. So this all brought up face to face to the Nazi authority. So at school it started. I was in high school and I had to leave. They kicked me out and I came in ordinary school, and the teacher was a monster. He was, I would say, a devil in his behavior. He was terrible. And I don't know which one, most probably both teachers have turned me in by the police. And so I got called by so-called doctors, which in reality were psychiatrists. And during 1 hour, they were trying to make out of me somebody who would turn in other witnesses. They asked me names about other ones. They asked me different things like that. And I could resist. I did not turn anyone in. But on the end, I ended up in front of a judge for youth. He was a nice man. He wanted absolutely to show that there is no one, that someone can live in Germany if he doesn't comply. You cannot swim against the sea. You cannot swim against the water, the stream. Germany has set the way each one has to live. He tried to convince me, but I was convinced that I had obligations, moral obligations toward God, and the moral obligations toward God did not fit in with the moral obligation of the nation. There had, was a choice to be done. Both could not go together. So when he saw that I did not give in, he sentenced me to come in a Nazi re-education home for children. So this was the end of the public part, because there I was locked in for almost 2 years. I had seen no one and could not talk to anyone. Hard work, nothing my own. The situation was very hard. So it was made, the purpose of that place was to erase from my thinking everything that belonged to the Bible and get only focused on my duties. And the work duty started at 6:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock in the evening, with no books, no reading, no talking, nothing. Only just plain pressure. This happened during the time my parents were in camp. Father had been arrested. He made 4 years concentration camp. And mother was arrested after I had gone to that penitentiary home, the re-education home. She made 2 years of camps. So when we came back, my parents were in a very bad condition. And the German judge, who had said that I was a soft child, that it was a shame that I was misled, and he had gone mean with my mother, very mean, making her responsible for what I was doing. Mother knew that I would not give in. And she always told me that she was happy that I would keep morally clean.
Very nice. Thank you. Now, it looks like we're going to have a little extra time. So, Simone, may I interject a question? When we talk about the school and the teacher that tried to help you, who sat down and told you a little bit about how he got around the Heil Hitler and what you told him. So this was kind of not planned for, but would it be okay if I added that question?
Well, that was the very first week the Germans were there, and he realized that I was not greeting. So I was denounced. So he knew that it would end up in a problem. So he wanted to reason with me and invited my mother. Father was already arrested. He invited my mother and me to have a chat. He talked with mother, didn't understand much because of the high German expressions. But then he took his chair and came next to me, asked mother if he could have a private talk with me. And mother said, "Yeah, free." So he said, "God does not want that you go into troubles. That is not what the Bible says. The Bible says be smart like a snake and soft like a dove. So you do what I do. Look at me. I never greet with the right hand. I greet with the left. Do like me. The left hand has no legal value. When you're in front of a judge with the right, you sign never with the left. So sign with the left and that will be okay. And I said, but I can't. And he said, why not? I said, because it's a lie. And he blushed. He said, if you take this as a lie, we cannot help you. I have to send you in a re-education place. I never talked about that situation with my parents, not before and not during, because their father was not home anymore. And I wouldn't share much with mother because I did not want that she is made responsible if by chance the police would find out that I would repeat what mother had said. She would have gotten severely punished, and this I did not want. So whatever came up to me, I took on myself to cover her up and not to make her responsible.
Very nice. Thank you. So could I ask also, with regard to the re-education home that you were sent to, could you tell us a little bit more about the difficult and challenging situation that you lived under there?
Yes, it was the same kind of living in the house as when the house was got started. It got started in 1850.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be an orphan home in the beginning. It afterwards, during the Nazi time, it had become education, so strictly children who came from families who had bad morals, or children who were under accusation, not for their behavior, but for their parents' behavior. So their rule was the children had no right to talk to each other. I stayed 2 years without talking. Everything was taken away. I had nothing my own, not a dress, nothing, not a pencil, not a piece of paper, nothing. And from 1st May until 1st November, we walked barefooted. We didn't have the shoes, except on Sundays when the children went to church, which was not my case since I did not go to the church. So I had to do the cooking for everyone at this place. It was hard work because those 35 children between 5 and 15 years old were keeping the house running. That is the cleaning, the mending, the washing, the ironing, the gardening. Everything was done by the children. There was no grown-up, only orders, no grown-ups. And if something went wrong, the beating, mostly on strikes on the hands, there was a law. A pair on the hands meant 1 evening without eating. I saw a child who got 7 pairs strokes on the hand, which meant 7 days without supper. And the child had to get up in front of everyone and say, thank you, I have no right to eat, I'm being punished. And the plate would come back empty. So this was the stress was put upon the children. The children, when they left with 14, sometimes they became mates and sometimes they would go to prison or camps. Now, while I was there, I came a second time in front of the judge, another one because it was another city. And there again, the same questions came up. And I continued. I had the feeling I cannot betray God. I loved God more than anybody else, and I would not give in. So he told me that we'll end up with a concentration camp. But it was the end of the war, and so they stretched my presence, seeing that the war would end the situation, and that Germany was losing friends, and that I would have to return to France. So this was the end of the ordeal.
Thank you for explaining that. And now you talked a little bit about the decision of conscience that you had to make when the teacher talked to you about raising your left hand, suggesting raising your left hand instead of your right hand to avoid extra complications. So that was your exercise of conscience and decision as a young girl. But now, can you tell us a little bit about Jehovah's Witnesses in the concentration camps and the unusual offer that the Nazis made to them that also put pressure on their conscience?
Once in a while, a witness who was in camp received the order by the Nazi to sign up a declaration. It was prepared, specially prepared, and it says that the one that signs has read the declaration and promises to separate from the witnesses, to become true German citizens, defending the fatherland, denouncing any other witness he knew. He forget some books from the witnesses to turn them into the police and turn in any person who would come up to him to talk with him about religion. He would denounce to the police. If the witness would sign that, he could get free. I don't have any idea if anybody was signing. Perhaps could be. Why not? But personally, I never heard about it. Most of them did not, which meant that the concentration camp were opened in 1934. Hitler came to power in 33. 34 came opening the camp, Dachau. And among the very first ones were already the so-called Bible students, Bibelforscher, as they called them. And later on, they decided to make a sign in the camp to distinguish between the political and between the Jews and between the other subhumans and between the communists and political and Jehovah Witnesses. They had triangles, different colors, and the color for the witness was purple, the royal color, they call that. So an SS man could right away know in front of a prisoner with whom he was dealing. He didn't need to make him talk. The triangle told him who he was. And my husband, who had been in concentration camp as a Jew, has told me that the SS men were in fury when it was about a witness. They were much harder than with anybody else. He has seen present when they were mistreated. All the witnesses together, and it's in the winter 1941, under a water pipe, they were standing outside, and they came under the water pipe. The water was freezing on their body, and they had no right to move. There were many deaths that day. The Nazi were terribly enemies of the Bible. They treated the witnesses much worse than anybody else. But Max said also, he saw the witnesses helping others in camp, sharing their bread with others, helping others who were not witnesses when they were completely crushed down by the situation, to get them morally lifted up. And it's happened to my husband himself. My husband was in camp from 39 until 45 as a German Jew. And he has been helped, even his life saved, by two witnesses who gave him, he was exhausted. He was near death and he could hardly walk anymore. And he was hungry. And two witnesses were working for the police, for the SS man, raising rabbits to make wool with rabbit's hair. And they had to feed them. And the feed those rabbits got was better than the feed the inmates got. So the witnesses made the secret arrangements that once in a while he could get rabbit food. And if those witness would have been discovered, they would have paid it by death. There was no pardon if you're sharing anything with inmates. But they did so, and they saved my husband's life. He was not a witness at that time. He had not studied the Bible, didn't know anything about it. That came much later, after Auschwitz. So they were known. If people read reports of camp commanders' reports, you can find that out. It's openly mentioned as being the special unbelieving behavior of Christians helping non-Christians in the concentration camp. My father himself has been helped by another witness, and that witness did it. He may have paid for it if the SS would have realized that my father was a witness. They did not when they accepted his arrangement. So what I want to say here, being Christian was also this kind of obligation, is to do the utmost to keep peace to keep respect and to help each other. And in camp, this was absolutely evident. Even many camp commanders of this time and historians now in Germany working on this part, they all mentioned that particular aspects of the witness in camp.
Very nice. Thank you. And just to make sure everybody understands, you mentioned the word Bibelforscher, which is German, and in English it would be Bible students. And that was the name of Jehovah's Witnesses in that early 30s here, kind of before World War II. So, okay. So now we see that some of these actions were widespread among Jehovah's Witnesses. But what was the outcome of your parents' position and your position at school?
Well, out of us three, I've been the one that has the least suffered. I was never beaten. I never had food privation. I had just privation of my family, privation like all children, nothing our own, never played, always work. But I liked work. So I remember that winter where I was sawing big trees, stems of straight trees. We were two girls, day out, day in, day out, day in, getting that wood done. We were exhausted and tired, painful back, but that was for me not a problem. My background is my grandparents have a mountain farm, very primitive people. I was known. I knew what it meant to work hard. So it did not change me. I had not specific pressure. It's not the same with my parents. Both parents had been mistreated very badly in camp. My father had become, he got sickness, he had fever. And after that fever, the doctor said this would be, normally should have died. He did not. This is the man where we can make medical experiments. So they were binding him a mosquito on the arm because they wondered if he makes some effect against malaria, because the German plane conductor who went in North Africa had malaria and they did not know how to handle it. So they took the prisoner in camps and made kind of experiences. Now, at that particular time, father was also asked to paint some dolls on boxes, but the camp commander told him, paint dolls on these boxes, but they are not going to be used for dolls. We have no time for dolls. We just use them during the Christmas time. Inside, we would put ammunition. And so father said, then I don't put any dolls on it. My conscience does not allow to paint a doll when I'm told it hides ammunition. And because of this refusal in the camp that was Dachau, he came to Mauthausen in Austria, which is the German equivalent in German terror, that is in Austrian territory of Auschwitz, the same way like Auschwitz. So you see, even in camp, the pressure continued and trying to break the integrity of a witness.
Thank you. So maybe we can talk a little bit in our remaining time about the lessons to be learned and that you reflect on now, looking back.
When I reflect on this time, I realize how my conscience kept all during all the time calm, peaceful. We are sometimes with crying because of the situation, but never regretting and never giving in. I always could keep my head up. I realized that that combination of knowledge of Bible principles helps the conscience to get strong and to overcome one's weakness. And by doing so, because you want to have your conscience clean, you find the power to resist what is bad. What follows is an inside peace, which bears fruit for the rest of your life. When I think of some people of my age, when they look back and their own position during that time, where they were getting along, that were maybe not with enthusiasm, but just to have peace, that's what they believe. But when they look back, there is no one single family in Alsace who is not a victim because of the Nazis, one reason or the other. Those people have come in the bloodshed because of Nazi theory and decisions taken. Clean conscience gives peace, but it gives more than peace. It gives the power to resist. And I'm really, really grateful that in my young age, the Bayer Bible entered in my house, and I realized that I cannot give to God what belongs to, I cannot give to Hitler what belongs to God. And that as a human, I have to practice love and merciful. By the way, just an example what that means. My mother had come to camp because she was denounced. And after the war, the French police found the denouncers. So she was called and the policeman said, "You signed that." And then we arrest them and punish them. My mother refused. She said, "I'm not here to retaliate. Retaliation belongs to God. I do not retaliate. I do not pay back evil for evil. But I would like to know who it is." Well, they were showing her the names. Sadly, there was a person in the house where we lived who had gone to the police and said, "Why is she still running around? The girl is gone, the husband is in camp, and she's still free. How long are you going to keep her free like that?" So mother got arrested. And really, when she heard it, and the police said, "Sign, and you look terribly," because she was very weak. You are in a terrible condition. She deserves to be punished. Not only did she not sign, but that person living in our apartment house in the third floor was dying on a terminal cancer and had no one anymore. She was a widow. And my mother went daily helping her to clean her, to prepare her food and to help her until she died. And that is how I learned what it meant to forgive. She left the judgment in God's hands, but she did not want to retaliate. And she taught me, if you want to be in peace in your life, never retaliate that. This is a lesson I cherish very much.
Very nice. Thank you for telling us that account. That's really is quite a lesson for us to all learn. I wonder about asking you, too. You talked a little bit about your parents and how they raised you. But one lesson in particular that we like to ask you to highlight is how your father taught you the importance of books, reading, and what you put in your brain. Could you share that?
Yeah. My father was an artist, a painter, worked in a factory. And on evenings, he would do reading to mother, and mother would do some knitting. That is the setting when I was 4 or 5 years old, sitting under the table with my doll. But I heard lots of names, complicated names, and I would go to father, "What does that word mean?" And one of those words was conscience. "Father, what is a conscience?" "No, father said it's a voice that is going to talk to you when you do something wrong. Or even if you do something good, it will talk." And for months, I went to father and said, "I don't hear anything. My conscience does not speak." And one day I was happy. I thought I had found it. I said, "Dad, my conscience told me last night." "What did it talk you?" "Turn your leg around. It hurts you." I said, "That's not the conscience. That is a muscle that gave you that message." He said, "It will come. You will learn what conscience is." And one day, I was stealing money. I was 6 years old. I wanted to have a piece of, to buy a doll for a poor child in school. I was 7 years old when I stole that money. And mother got it. She bought the doll. She put the doll on a shelf and gave me a lesson about stealing and what conscience is. But I could not go to father. I could not ask him because she said, "I'm not going to denounce you to your father. He would punish you. You just try to understand how the conscience would have worked. You would not have done that." So it came about that I understood what conscience is. And approximately at the same time with father, I had a discussion and he said, "You would not have done what you just did if your conscience would have talked." He said, "You have to listen. You know what is right. You don't do it. but something says in you, this is not good. So you always listen. When your conscience is not feeling well, you take the lesson. And when you go to school, you would learn how to read and write. Then your brain is going to work like a library. What you put in your brain, if you keep it there, you can get to it later on and take it out and read it again. So be careful what you put in your brain. Between what you put in your brain and your conscience, you have guidelines for your life. And that was before we started learning the Bible. That is when the Bible came, the Bible finds our hearts and brains ready to put this in action. What God loves, put it in your hand. What he hates, get it out. This is what helped us. And because of the holy name of Jehovah, this was for us the sacred thought to defend that name and never permit that anyone humbles any situation down concerning that name. So I can say conscience, very early in a child's heart, is the best treasure parents can give to their child.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you for those accounts and the lessons. We really appreciate hearing that. Well, yeah. we'll mention that Simone Leibster is the author of the book Facing the Lion, Memoirs of a Young Girl in Nazi Europe. And the book is available on Bookshare in an Audible format. But we just want to clarify, it's not on, is it called BARD, B-A-R-D, Braille and Audio Reading Downloads?
Yes, yes.
Okay. But so it is available on Bookshare. So we really appreciate, Simone, you telling us about your story. And we thank the Federation for inviting us to talk this morning. It's quite a privilege, and we appreciate it.